In less than 2 weeks, the hallways of Clark County Schools will be abuzz with returning students, but some familiar problems will return as well. The district is short of licensed teachers. Classrooms will again be overcrowded, and the district says it desperately needs additional funding as well as money to repair old schools and build new ones. The person ultimately responsible for these onerous tasks is Clark County School District Superintendent Pat Skorkowski, who joins us now. Superintendent, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's great to be here.
The district is short about 650 teachers, and you're looking at the new school year in less than 2 weeks. How did those things collide?
I think that this is a national trend, having to go out and find new teachers. Our teacher education colleges are producing fewer graduates. Our competitive markets that we usually recruit from are now hiring teachers. And so it makes it a very difficult time for us to be able to bring people to Nevada, because we only in the state of Nevada can produce about 35% of the teachers that we needed this year.
So how does the district change the way in which it recruits qualified talent? What are you going to have to do going forward?
I think we have to look at the recruiting methods for the younger age, because they are recruited through very different methods. We use social media. We use different websites that are virtual job fairs instead of actually going out and doing a physical job fair. We are looking at all of these things. Plus, we're looking at programs for alternative route to licensure so that we can grow our own teachers with those people who might have a bachelor's degree and are looking for a change.
Now, with that in mind, the district is asking the state to grant temporary teaching licenses to otherwise qualified teachers who haven't met certain state requirements. What happens if the state doesn't sign off on that?
We start them as substitutes, unfortunately, until they can get that certification through the state of Nevada. They have assured us that they will rush, once the requirements are met, that they will rush the licensing through so these people can get in. But some people are choosing not to come to Las Vegas for that very reason, and that's unfortunate. So we have to work through the system to try to get better prepared for this in the future.
So what exactly do these teachers lack? What requirements are missing?
Sometimes it's Nevada state law and Nevada constitution. And making sure that they can be highly qualified, which is what the requirement for the No Child Left Behind waiver includes, the language it includes.
Mm-hmm. In other personnel issues, you recently reinstated two administrators who were involved in allegations of altering test answers at Kelly Elementary to improve scores. Why did you decide to reinstate them within the district?
Once you go through all the information, and it's still under investigation right now, and so it's important to remember that we have not submitted our final report to the state, so it's very difficult for us to comment on that. We confirmed that they are back in the district or have been assigned back into the district in various positions, but until we submit our final report to the state, it's hard for us to comment until the state has signed off on that.
It's understandable. We spoke with a reporter from ProPublica about similar test cheating accusations in other school districts across the country, and she said in many cases the school districts got the police involved. You haven't done that in this case. Why not?
We actually turned it over to the Attorney General, who is the ultimate authority in this state. So we figured that if the Attorney General can handle the investigation, that's probably where it needs to be handled.
So how much damage has been done to the credibility of the testing program if the state still insists its investigation shows that school district officials changed students' answers to lift test scores?
We are committed to ensuring that every school district employee who deals with the assessment program is going through extensive training. We are retraining administrators this year on what all the procedures are. The focus is how do we make sure that we are following the guidelines set forth by the state of Nevada to ensure that these type of situations don't happen. It's not widespread. Anytime we get any type of a tip or a recommendation that there may be a violation, we instantly launch our own investigation and notify the state as we're required by law to do.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Clark County School District Superintendent Pat Skorkowski. What concerns do you have as we head into the new school year in less than 14 days? Call us at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You can also email us at son@knpr.org. Overcrowding it's been on your plate throughout your first year. It's going to be on your plate again this year. It is an issue for Clark County classrooms all over. Last week, you announced plans to expand the district's magnet school program. This would draw more advanced students into less crowded and underperforming schools. What data are you seeing from the magnet schools we have currently that make you think the program's worth expanding?
When you look at our high school magnet and career and tech education programs, our career and tech academies, each one of those has a 93% or higher graduation rate. Veterans Tribute had 100% graduation rate this year. We have been tasked to replicate those successful programs. So we are expanding high school magnet programs. We're also expanding the elementary and middle school feeder programs that help get those kids ready for those high school magnet programs and the rigor that's involved with them. We are also expanding our career and tech education programs, which is programs that will increase AP classes in certain schools, as well as make sure that there's career tech education certification programs so that students can now get college credit through these programs for attending three years of classes that are in that career and tech education program.
Can you expand these programs, the magnet school programs, without diluting their quality?
Very much so. Very much so. We actually, the programs, when you look at the status of them, many of the programs start with a freshman and sophomore year. So we are beginning with teaching those kids at that rigorous level in those content areas right from the very beginning of their freshman or sophomore year. Gives them time before they get into the junior and senior year where they're really looking at those CTEs or the diploma programs to really get them ready for those assessments that are aligned with that.
Now, won't those additional magnet schools take additional resources and ultimately more money?
They will, and that's why one of the reasons that I'm bringing in this outside group to look at our budget, to sit down and say, hey, you know what, help us go through this budget, find areas where we could be utilizing money in other capacities, and to really focus in on that. We also know that with additional students coming into the district, there's going to be some additional funding that goes along with that. If we are able to, then we will turn that funding into support to get those programs up and running.
It would seem to me that the problem we talked about a few moments ago, which is short 650 teachers asking for temporary teaching licenses and such, may come into play here. How do you find teachers for new magnet schools if the district is already having problems with staffing?
What we are looking at is we are not adding staff. We will be retraining staff because we already are allocated a specific number of teachers for the number of students that we have in our district. So now it comes to professional development and changing and adapting those so that those teachers have the skills necessary to be able to teach within these programs.
Mm-hmm. These programs are supposed to bring in stronger students to schools in less affluent parts of the valley. How well does that really work as a strategy? Are students willing to leave local schools for magnet schools?
When you look at the number of applications that we have for our magnet schools, only a third of our students who apply actually get in. And so I can tell you right now that when you look at the categories that we are adding, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, as well as the arts, are the two categories that are the highest, with over 22,000 applications that go into those programs. We only have enough seats for the programs which are limited. When you look at Clark High School has a limited number of seats. They can only allow so many seats in their freshman class because it's a school within a school. You look at the Las Vegas Academy. It only allows, you know, approximately 400 students into its freshman class. So by replicating those programs, we are expanding extensively the number of seats that are available. So those students would then be able to get into those programs. And we know that they are coming from all over the valley. So it may actually provide some relief to some of those overcrowded areas.
As you know, the whole concept is school within a school, these magnet schools. How does the school within a school benefit the kids who are at these schools who are not part of the magnet program?
Actually, they have some preference when it comes to the magnet programs itself. So if they live within that neighborhood where there is a magnet school, then they are given preferential treatment when it comes to that. So we have a dual program. Cashman is an example. We have a lot of our neighborhood kids at Cashman Middle School, which is a STEM math program, math, science, technology, engineering program. And so we have that program there. So there are kids that come in, and it's one of our highest number of applications for the seats available. So we know that both the neighborhood kids get to experience the program as well as the students that come in. So we've got to replicate that. And seats are available at Kenny Gwynn, which is just right down the street. So now we know that we're going to be able to build a second program there that will really help alleviate the overcrowding in some of the southwest parts of town and actually bring students into that program that is so highly sought after.
The new academic year begins at CCSD in less than 2 weeks, and we're talking with Clark County School District Superintendent Pat Skorkowski. If you've got questions, comments, concerns about the new school year and beyond, call us at 702-258-3552. 702-258-3552, or drop us a line at son@knpr.org. We'll start with Ed in Las Vegas, who joins us now. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly.
Hey, so I was wondering, what happened to Fund Education First?
That, actually, that bill is still in effect. What happens at the legislative session is that they will not be able to actually allocate any funds until education is funded. What the unintended consequence of that is basically they wait till the very end of the legislative session. They'll fund education, and then they'll fund all the other pieces after that. So it is still happening, but it's utilized a little different, I think, than the intent was initially planned.
Ed, do you have any other concerns about funding?
Well, it just seems that the politics are just really, I mean, I've been in town for 42 years, and our school district has been beaten up pretty good from the time I've been here. And it just seems that all we're doing is destroying what our kids can do, and the politicians are just running rampant with that. The initial set for this when everybody voted for it to come in is that education was funded before anything else, and I've seen it where the money was taken out of education, and we just seem to be getting the bottom of the barrel all the time.
So, Pat Skorkowski, how big a concern is funding this year?
Funding is always a major concern. When you look at any national report, it shows us ranking, if not the last, among the last when it comes to funding per pupil. One of the things that we are working on is a change to the funding formula. The original funding formula was developed in 1967, and I think our state and our community was a very different place back in 1967. So we are working to change the funding formula so that there is not only equitable funding, so looking at special populations, but looking at adequate funding as well. So it is trying to not only redistribute the funds that are there, but to add additional funds to the base itself.
Well, with respect to those funds, 12 or 13 days from now, what will those funds look like in a typical CCSD classroom?
Well, it's not happening yet, so we have to get that through the next legislative session. I will tell you, the focus would be to focus in on providing more support to second language learners, to our gifted and talented students, so the other end of the spectrum is being looked at as well, our free and reduced lunch students, so that because they come in with additional challenges, as well as our special education students. So it would be a little different structure to the funding formula itself.
Ed, thanks very much for your call. We'll turn next to Mike in Las Vegas. Mike, thanks for calling and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank
Good morning.
You.
Mm-hmm.
I've wondered, since my son went into high school and his principal raised the issue actually in another state, but what incentive do the students have on all these standardized tests to actually exert themselves? I mean, some of the kids will do it just out of personal pride, but I suspect a lot of them are looking at this as, you know, 3 hours of their life they're not going to get back, and the sooner they turn in that answer sheet, the sooner they can get on to something they care about.
One of the challenges that we face in the state of Nevada is the graduation requirements, and they have recently changed. In the past, for Nevada students, they had to pass the high school proficiency exam, all four sections of it, reading, writing, math, and science. The students understood very clearly that if they don't pass that assessment, then they don't get to walk in graduation. We had that this year for the first time. And I will tell you, we're getting ready for over 370 students that are going to graduate next Monday and Tuesday at the Smith Center, who met the requirements from June until now, which is extremely exciting. But you're exactly right. We have to have students understand that. We're going to be moving to an end-of-course exam for students in their freshman and sophomore years that are Algebra 1, Geometry, English 9, and English 10. Students, and it's not been determined at what level that they would have to pass those exams yet and pass the courses, but they will have to do that to be able to graduate high school. So they will have to take it in a manner that is serious in nature, and then be able to, for us, we'll have to provide remediation for those students who don't pass it to get them to pass those assessments.
Okay, so is it an effort to keep the incentive there for students?
Correct, it is. And then we can actually utilize assessments to provide remediation as well, because our goal is to have every student walk out the door with a high school diploma and be college or career ready, whichever they may choose. But they need to have both options available to them, and they need to have the skills necessary to be successful.
All right, Mike, thanks very much for your call. 702-258-3552 is our number. If you have questions, comments, or concerns for Clark County School District Superintendent Pat Skorkowski, 702-258-3552 is our number. It's clear the district's got a need for more funding. When we last talked with you, you didn't have a strong view one way or another as to whether the margins tax is the best solution for Nevada's ongoing school funding problem. Have you changed your opinion since you were last here?
No, I think the opinion that I have that is very strong is that there has to be more. I'm not sure the right funding mechanism and whether the margins tax is the right funding mechanism or not. I just know that we need to find more money for education. We need to ensure that it stays in education and that is not taken away, as the previous caller talked mm-hmm. about, where monies that were intended for education were used to fill in the holes that were in the budget, and so that they could use that money that was set aside for education somewhere else.
So if the margins tax does, in fact, appear to lead to more the availability of more monies for the district and for education in Nevada, would you then be more inclined to support it?
Well, I think it's, you know, again, any tax is something we have not taken a position on in the district in any situation. I think that if money is going to come to education, obviously we're going to look at where it comes from and how it can be utilized in the most effective manner to make a difference down with the classroom teachers and the students.
Should any other funding models get this kind of scrutiny, this kind of attention?
Well, I think that we have to look at every funding mechanism to see the validity of it and see whether it's going to actually filter through the system itself and make it down into the classroom. And that's our fear with any type of initiative, that it may be taken away or it's something that's not sustainable that we can't depend on that will actually be an increase to our distributive schools account funding that makes it in that per pupil expenditure.
Our number 702-258-3552. Ann joins us from Las Vegas. Ann, thanks for calling and welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a question comment. I am one of those applicants interested in becoming a teacher, trying to find the right information and get the appropriate licensing, and I am finding nothing but obstacles and difficulties in first getting the information I need, and second, getting and fulfilling those requirements. I've literally tried to talk to the Department of Education a number of times, and they are not even answering their phone and refer their calls to email. I've sent numerous emails and I'm really not getting answers to my questions. Now, I think that's kind of a disservice to our community to put so many obstacles in not answering the questions to those people looking to become teachers. It's very, very difficult.
It is a little frustrating for all of us, Anne, and I wish that there were some magic number that I could give you to get through to the system. What I can do, though, is make sure if you call the person at the district that you've been working with and get your number and let them know that you were on KMPR and the superintendent said, okay, let's see what we can do to maybe help you navigate the system for RN, because we would love to have you in place by the first day of school if you're a qualified teacher.
Anne, thanks very much for your call. We'll turn next to Sarah. Sarah, welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a son who is going to be starting kindergarten next year, and I thought that meant I had a year to really kind of explore what the district has to offer and see where, you know, my son would get the best education. But I was really surprised to find out that some of the charter schools have lotteries in January for enrollment starting next fall. And so I'm realizing now I really need to get on the stick and educate myself about what the options are and what would be the best way to serve my child. And I'm wondering what the superintendent can recommend with regards to being an involved parent. You know, everything that I read says the best way to get a good education for your kid, no matter what school they attend, is to be involved. I've never had a kindergartner before, and I don't know how I can help my son, but also help the teacher. You know, unfortunately, I do work full-time, so it's not like I can be a classroom parent and be in there all the time. But what can parents do who want to be useful and helpful, not only for their students, their children, but also for the teachers themselves. And I'm happy to get my answer off here.
All right, very good. Thanks, Sarah.
Well, I think then the most important thing, Sarah, is first that you're an active, involved parent now, even asking the right questions. Just for basic information for our school district, you can go to the ccsd.net/backtoschool. It's a website that tells you basic information about what you need to know for enrolling your child. But I will tell you, the first thing that you can do to really become an informed parent is to understand what it is your child's going to be expected to do when they walk in the door for kindergarten, to understand the skills necessary for them to be successful that first year. And then if you are a full-time working parent, we understand that. We have systems built in place so that, and it'll start at the end of September, it's a new system that's a parent portal, so that every parent can be able to access their child's information. They will know absences, they will know tardies, they will know situations about behavior, they will know the child's grades on specific assignments. All of that is included so that you can stay informed. We also have a connection way that you can email the teachers so that you can send that email during the day. They may not be able to get to it because they're teaching your child during the day, but they will get back to you and be able to do that. Also, we do have a lot of teachers who spend a lot of time on the phone with parents, you know, working through those issues because we know that they are trying to put food on the table and support their child in the home. And so we work with them outside of that to make sure that they are involved and actively engaged in their child's education.
All right, Sarah, thanks very much for your call. 702-258-3552 is our number. Catherine is next in Las Vegas. Catherine, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was a teacher with the school district for 7 years. I also was teacher of the year 1 year in the East Region at my school. I left the district a couple years ago. I resigned to go back to school full-time for another degree. I'm still a substitute teacher currently. I applied to be a teacher this past spring, and I was told that I was not qualified to be a teacher after currently being a substitute and working in the district for 7 years as an actual full-time teacher.
Pat Skolkowski?
Well, I don't know the specifics of your individual situation, but I will, if you've been in the district as a substitute, I will say that I'm sure that there are ways that we can do that. I don't know if it has to do with a licensing issue or if it's a school district issue on our side, but I think it's important. You can actually go online to the district website, and if you'll look, there's a place where you can email the superintendent directly. If you give me your information and what's going on, then I will make sure that we follow up with you.
All right, Catherine, thanks very much for your call. We have a Southern Nevada resident who writes and says subs are being offered up to $150 a day for long-term vacancies, but the small increases in vacancy pay rate is not enough, as well as not getting benefits, vacation, and sick days. Subs who take long-term jobs are locked into those positions, don't want to be paid a third of what licensed teachers earn with no benefits, yet do the same amount of work. Also, the feeling that if a long-term sub needs to take time off, that will get her unofficially blacklisted because getting a sub for a sub is frowned upon.
Well, we are increasing our substitute pay. I would love to be able to increase pay all the way around, but with a limited budget that we talked about, it's very difficult. We do need to find better incentives for our people who want to be long-term substitutes, who are dedicated to our students just as much as our teachers are. We are looking at increasing that, and it's $25 per day. That's not a lot, but it does make a difference in the long run. It is a start. This is the first time that we have actually increased substitute pay in a number of years. So in these challenging, difficult times, we recognize the value of our substitute teachers in the classroom, and working together, we're trying to figure out if there is a way through our methods, if we can look at some benefits for our long-term substitutes, and maybe even if there's not, then maybe even after 60 days in a long-term position, increasing the pay a little more so that we can recognize their value and show them that we do understand and appreciate what they do in our classrooms with our kids.
Now, a little bit earlier, we talked about the district's need for teachers. As we kind of wind this down, what do teachers need getting ready for this new school year that they're not getting, either from the district or from students or parents?
Well, our current teachers, you know, they have some of the basic things that they are ready to go. There are many changes that we have coming online. So teachers, I think, first and foremost, need the support of the community. I think that they need to be recognized for the professionals that they are and that they are included. When we talk about the positive things that are going on in this community, our teaching workforce is making a difference in the classroom. So I think that that's the first thing. The other thing is we know that teachers often need extra supplies and things like that. So we have so many community organizations who have come together to help both our teachers in need and our parents and students in need. The Teacher Exchange through the Public Education Foundation is an amazing location where they are able to get supplies and classroom sets of things for teachers who may need additional support in the classroom. It's the opportunity for teachers to take things. Some of our retired teachers donate materials there that they've used over the years, and so now teachers can go in and access that information. I think the other thing is they need to really spend some time with some of the new changes that we have. So this is the first year that we're actually giving our teachers a full day where they can spend uninterrupted time setting up their classroom and getting ready for those students that first day. So we are not scheduling meetings during one of those days back, and we're allowing that time for teachers to really get in there and make sure that they are set for those students that are going to walk in the door the first day, whether they are ready for them or not.
Pat Skorkowski is the superintendent of the Clark County School District. Mr. Skorkowski, always good to have you here. Thank you.
Great to be here.